Anthropology is a science which deals with humanity, which asks the question, ever asks, since we have access of records of humanity, the question, who and what is a human being? How can we describe humanity? How can we recognize humanity in relation to nature, to our fellow creatures, and in relation to God? That is a special task of theological anthropology. And when I mention that there is theological anthropology, then I showed already that there is a broad variety of anthropologies in the science. There is a social anthropology, an economical, a cultural anthropology, a biological anthropology, and so on and so on. Almost every kind of science, and I use the word science a bit differently than it is normally used in the English language. Science means both natural science and social sciences, as sociology, psychology, and so on. We have in German the word Wissenschaft, which covers both sides, the social and the natural sciences. So in every science, you can deal with the question, what is humanity? What is a human being? The problem of this question is that we don't ask this question toward an object as we do when we search the growing of flowers, or how it works that the moon circles the earth and so on, but we ask this question about ourselves. It is not a question toward something different of ourselves, but it's a question which deals with ourselves. That is one of the biggest problems of anthropology, that the subject and the object is mixed in the question. And that is very unique in the whole world. Not, as far as we know, nobody or nothing asks this question, who and what I am in the universe, only human beings. And maybe this is already a hint for the difference between humanity and all other existence in the cosmos, in the whole world. Humanity asks for humanity. And the science of anthropology is a very new science. It was developed in the late 18th century, because in this time the problem of natural science arose, and there was a distinction between philosophy and between natural sciences. Objective sciences became much more important than philosophy. Before this, from the beginning of mankind till the 18th century, the question of natural sciences and philosophy was never separated. It was always asked together. And only with the development of modern sciences, this distinction came into reality, a distinction which is very problematic. We will see that later, especially problematic for anthropology. But of course, the question for humanity, the question, what is humankind, what is man, was a question which was asked earlier than the development of anthropology. It is a question which was asked from the very beginning on. You can see that in the paintings of the hollows in French, of the very ancient man, where humans reflected their being with other beings in the world by painting animals, large animals, on the walls of these hollows, prehistorical painting. And it's very interesting that if you track down the development of humankind, you find in the very early beginning already art, or the attempt to realize creation by repeating it in art. Maybe that is a description you can make by art, you can make for art, that the attempt to create again, to create from the impressions of creation. And that is found in the very early beginning of mankind. Before I go farther, I want to ask you some questions. How would you define human beings? I'm looking for a definition for human beings, a definition which should not contain more than 5 words. Because otherwise you can deliver a whole book about the specialities and characteristics of humankind. A definition, the shorter the better. How would you define humanity?
Free agent.
Amidst nature. Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. Are there any other definitions? That's no problem.
As we get most.
Right.
Link between past and future.
Link between past and future. That would relate human beings especially to the problem of time. And I can mention that right now, that one characteristic of humankind is that we know about our past and we have expectations toward our future. That is absolutely unique in the whole world, that people can expect their future and remember their past. You will never find any planning for future in the realm of animals. That is very unique for humankind, and therefore that's a very good definition, link between past and future. Are there any other definitions, attempts?
Mortality.
Okay, the animal which knows its own mortality. It's very interesting, we come to this later, about the limitations of humankind. There is one famous definition of humankind which defines it as the limited nature. Humankind's a limited nature. We come to this later. Thank you. There was another. Intelligent being with a soul. Mm-hmm. That comes very close to the classical definition of humanity. We come to this very soon. Are there any other attempts?
I'm not sure it's sharply defined.
Mm-hmm. The statement, I have to repeat that for the tape. The statement shows some disregard in the distinction between humanity and animals, and that is exactly one of the biggest problems of anthropology. We come to this later. How we can define human being in the differences and in the common things with the kingdom of animals. And of course there are very different opinions among scientists about that. Concerning the remembrance of the past and the planning for the future, human beings are the only beings we know about which record their past and which presume their future by recording or by making descriptions about their future. There is, of course, a kind of reaction and a learning process in animals. For example, an animal, a cat who burns its feet on a hot stove wouldn't go again to the stove because the cat learned that this is dangerous and very unpleasant. So the cat does not go again. So there is a process of learning, and you could define this process as a kind of intelligence. So I agree totally with you when you say human beings are not the only intelligent beings or the only beings who can learn. But concerning the past and the future, there is no memory in the way that the cat or any other animal regards the experience in the past as something happened in the past. It is a learning process which is a reaction to information. But it is not an experience of past and future, and it is not the experience of being in time. Otherwise, it would be necessary to have records. That is the only measurement we can have to see that beings react on time, that they measure time. And there's no animal which measures time. Okay, that is a definition, and we cannot discuss right now the problems of differences and distinctions between humanity and animals. But that is a very good definition. Human beings as the beings nature would be better without. There are several definitions and several attempts to describe human beings, and therefore the title of this session of today, that the development of humanity is the biggest mistake ever happened in nature, because it leads directly to the destruction of nature. If you know a bit more about the process in nature, you are a bit more careful about speaking about accidents or about failures in nature, because that is again a very humanistic attempt to understand nature. How can nature make failures? That is already a question of decision about good and bad. And that would be another difference between human beings and animals, that human beings can decide about good and bad, which is not be found in animals as far as we know. I always have to put this to all of my sentences, as far as we know, because in anthropology and in all sciences, we are still on a very low level of knowledge. And if you compare what we learned about humanity and the development to humanity in the last 200 years, we can expect that we find out much more. And there are a lot of unsolved mysteries about man and about humanity. Despite that fact, a lot of scientists assume that even though we can expect much more knowledge about humanity, we will reach borders. The mystery about humanity will never be totally solved, and the mystery about the creation of the cosmos will never be solved at all by only scientific means. That means by only comparison of figures and studying of natural laws. But we can leave this question open. There is another very famous definition of man as the naked ape, which would go a bit in the same direction, a bit more negative description of man as the ape who lost its ability to survive properly in nature, but an ape, human beings as apes, who can only survive on cost of nature. And if you look at our societies and at our world, there is some truth in this attempt to describe humanity. Other definitions, other attempts. Yeah, that is a very important thing. Despite the fact that, for example, apes use sticks for getting fruits from the tree, and even despite the fact that certain apes could look for special sticks which are most helpful using to get the fruits, there is no tool-making animal in the world. Only maybe in the, it is discussed, it is again an open question. Anthropology deals always with open questions, but it never comes to a stadium where two different kind of materials are used to making a tool. Only humankind is able to make tools from different kind of materials, to bring them together, to form them new, and to use them for the purposes they are useful to. So that would be another very distinctive definition of humankind in the realm of nature. Any other attempts? Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's a very, very interesting and good definition. The classical definition of human beings is the definition of humans as, I used first the Latin version, as animal rationale, or the reasonable animal. As most of your definitions, this definition speaks about humans as animals, animal with reason or with ratio. And that is a very old tradition in defining things, that you look for a common ground and for a specific difference. So the common ground here would be animal. And you the same word in Latin for animal and anima is the soul. So there is a kind of connection between life and soul. And of course, in the old tradition and old religions, people believed that animals have souls too. Every being which has life is connected to soul. Animal and anima, that is a soul. And the very specific difference of human beings here is the reason or the ratio. Whatever you think about the intelligence of animals like dolphins or very highly developed apes, there is always a difference between their intelligence and the human intelligence, because as far as we know, there is no language, no distinctive language among animals, even though there was a very strong attempt to find languages between among dolphins, and there was a very hard attempt to teach apes languages. But about the animals, about the dolphins, I don't know very much. But as far as I know, it was never, the stadium never was reached that you could prove a language comparative to languages of humans in, among dolphins. And concerning apes, it is true that some apes were able to learn a very limited vocabulary, a very limited language. But they never developed this language among themselves, but they only learned this language in contact with human beings, which shows that, of course, and nobody wants to discuss that, that of course there is a strong link between humanity and nature. You can see that very clearly just if you look how different processes work in our body. I mean the chemical and the biochemical work of our bodies are very similar to the work of the same processes in animals. It is kind of interesting that, I don't know if you know that, that our skin is more similar to the skin of swines, of pigs. And pigs can even get sunburning. But of course they never invented some cream against it, as humans did. So of course there is a link. Humanity is a creature of nature and takes part in nature, but there is a difference too. And what is anthropology interested in is to define these differences and to find out what we have in common with nature and what makes the difference of human beings as a special kind of creatures toward all other creatures. And it is not only a question out of curiosity, despite the fact that you need a lot of curiosity to do anthropological research. It is a question which may teach us how we can handle our own humanity, how we can learn to live in a way which supports our being as humans and supports our being among the nature. And the development in the between the 19th and 20th century is so dramatically that we really have to learn how to behave on this earth if we want to survive. There are other creatures on the earth who did not fit into surviving. And if we want to survive in the cosmos, in the world, we have to learn about ourselves and about our links toward nature. And therefore, in the beginning of modern anthropology, in the 19th century, it was not only the question, what is the man or what is humanity, which was asked by Kant, Immanuel Kant, but there were three questions combined which led to the question, what is the man, what is humanity? That is the questions, what can we know? That is a question of science. It's a question, what should we do? That is a question of ethics. And the question, what can we hope? That is a question of religion. And all these three questions together lead to the question, what is humanity? So, in the modern anthropology, there is a tendency to stress much more the question, what can we know? But that would lead to a very one-sided understanding of humanity. We have to keep in mind the other two questions which are important for surviving, the questions, what should we do? The question of ethics, and the question, what can we hope? The question of our religion. The development of modern anthropology is characterized by what some philosophers told the three big injuries or the three big insults of humanity. Before the change of the worldview after the Middle Ages, there was no question about the centrality of humankind in the cosmos, in the whole world. The whole worldview was centered on the earth and self-centered on humanity. And there was no doubt that the question of what is the man, what is humanity, is the most important question ever asked in the whole cosmos. But then came the first injury or the first insult, by the realization that the world the earth on which we live is not the center of the world, but is only a part of a big universe in which the earth is only a little spot somewhere, you would probably say somewhere in Iowa or so. The world, the earth, is not the center, and somebody described this that the man was condemned from the center of the world to the point X in the middle of nowhere. And that was a very deep and big shock for humanity to realize that we are not the center of the world. It was the first big injury of humankind by Galilei, Copernicus, and Giordano Bruno. And as to the other two injuries, people reacted very aggressively against this development. They didn't want to know about that because they felt like losing their ground, losing their basis of the whole existence. If you only are a little spot in the immense broad of universe, then you may feel very unimportant. The second big injury or insult was not done by astronomy, but by biology. That was the concept of evolution and the concept that not from the very beginning on human beings did exist on the earth, but they are only a part of a development of life. This is combined with the name of Charles Darwin. And like in the Middle Ages, the reaction, especially the reaction of churches, was very strongly against this broadening of knowledge about humankind, because this broadening seemed to be an insult, seemed to question the importance of humanity. Till today, there are a lot of people who think that you cannot combine a religious worldview, a belief in creation, and a concept of evolution. But it's kind of interesting that because the first insult happens so much time before, people have accepted this. I don't think that there are many people in the world who believe still that the earth is the center of the universe. There is a club in England I know about who still, of course in England, would say that the world is flat and it's not a ball, or how do you call that?
Sphere.
Yeah. But that can only happen in England. I'm not quite sure if they take themselves serious or not. But the question of evolution is still very much discussed, not only because there are still missing links in the range of evolution, and there are still possibilities to question the whole theory, because the theory is not perfect, is not proved in whole. But most people who question evolution don't question it because of scientific reasons, but because they think that this is an insult of humanity. The third big insult, and maybe not the last one, is the insult of modern psychology, combined with the name of Sigmund Freud. Freud developed a theory that human beings are not masters of their own, but they are dependent on psychological developments and psychological influences, which makes human beings not as the ego most people think they are, but they are influenced in their whole behavior by things they have not in their own hand. And that was, of course, another big insult for humanity, because at least people want to govern about themselves. If they couldn't govern about the cosmos and about the whole creation, and then they had to learn that even we as human beings cannot totally govern ourselves, but we are dependent on psychological reactions and impressions and so on. So the learning about humanity is not only a learning what is possible and what we are, but it is a learning in which we change. And that is very important to face. It is maybe not easy to face, but it is the reality of humankind, that by learning about ourselves, we change, and we have to change our own attitudes toward ourselves. We had to accept that we are not the middle of the cosmos, and I think we have to accept that we are in the midst of a biological or natural process, and we have to accept that we cannot rule ourselves totally. All these three insults, in my view, don't disapprove any religious understanding of humanity. Excuse me. And all these three insults don't give any answer to the question which belongs to humanity too, as I mentioned before, the question, what can we hope? And therefore I think the churches and religious people don't have to fight already lost battles against these injuries. That makes no sense at all. The burning of astronomers didn't change anything in the reality of our cosmos. The condemnation of Charles Darwin or the refusal to learn about evolution will not change anything about the reality of ourself. And the condemnation of Freud and his theories will not change the facts at all. We have to learn to understand the facts of humanity and to interpret them for the benefit of our own. And we have to learn that we will always learn more about ourselves and will always know more about ourselves. We will learn always more about ourselves, and therefore it is no way to refuse knowledge to handle the problem of humanity. It is always the problem for every human being, for theologians as well as for scientists and for people who just ask out of curiosity how to understand the information we have for the benefit of our own. How does the anthropology works? Mainly, anthropology is a comparative science. That means anthropologists try to collect information and to compare information to find out specialities. And it's very interesting, that goes in all directions, and anthropologists are probably the best informed people, because they have to know everything to understand facts and details. It's very interesting. I just bought a textbook about anthropology, and I wonder if I found this. What strange things anthropologists do. Another anthropologist wrote a scientific paper on how to ask for a drink of water from a member of a tribe he had studied. And still another described in useful detail how to interpret the mood of fierce Saharan Tuareg warriors by the way they drape their veils. The theory and practice of how to dunk donuts in North Africa in order to avoid grave insults has also been described carefully and serves still as another example of how apparently trivial events can be critical in unfamiliar places. So everything is interesting for an anthropologist, everything which has to do with humankind and with human beings. What makes it difficult is that you still need a theory to understand details. And there we are in a problem which is a problem for all modern sciences, not only for anthropology, but for physics, chemistry, and all other natural science as well. This is the problem of the what we call an hermeneutical circle. It's very easy to understand. It sounds a bit difficult, the word, but it's very easy to understand. Everything we learn, we can only learn because we have already a knowledge. So we go to details, we go to things with our knowledge and try to find out new things. But the problem is that the way how we go to things, the way how we try to understand things, the way how we learn things is already structured by the things we know already. So we have a certain attitude towards things, and this attitude influences the way we learn about things and therefore influences the result of the learning. So the whole process of learning is a continuous circle in which we go with knowledge to things we want to learn about and to understand these things in our own knowledge and our own understanding. That is especially a problem for anthropologists because in anthropology the interpretation is much more important than the interpretation in modern physics. In modern physics, you work mainly with figures and with experiments. And of course, this experiment is influenced by the way you know about physics. So the problem appears in all sciences. But in anthropology, you have to found a theory to understand details. And therefore, anthropology is much more in the danger to understand things basically from your own knowledge. And because anthropology was developed in the Western world or in Western thinking, anthropologists made the mistake and always will make the mistake to understand things by the view of the Western civilization. So they value their values and their way to describe things, describe, for example, social behavior, is influenced by their experience of the Western world. And that is, of course, a bondage of their possibility to ask questions. So the first thing, if you want to be an anthropologist, and everybody is in a way an anthropologist, because everybody asks the question, what is humanity? The first thing you have to learn is that it is not so important to get knowledge, it is not so important to get information, but the most important thing is to be able to ask questions, to question everything, to take nothing as normal. Even just when I sit here and have my hand in this way, that's not normal. So you have to question, why does he do that? What is the reason for that? And you have to ask everything which may seem trivial and normal. And the most important things, and that is not only in anthropology but in all sciences, were discovered when people ask questions nobody asked before, because everybody took the result as granted. When Newton saw the apple falling from the tree, he began to ask the question, why does the apple do that? Nobody asked that before. After Newton, we cannot imagine that. Nobody asked this question before. And he found the laws of gravity. I have always problems because I think in the English language, all terms, all Latin terms are wrongly pronounced. But anyway, so you have to question the normal. That is much more important than to question the unnormal. I mean, everybody asks questions about things he or she does not understand. But to ask questions about things we believe to understand, and then realizing that we don't, because we didn't know the laws behind the events. That is a much more challenging and much more important thing to learn. As I mentioned before, anthropology happens in various kinds of fields. There is a sociology, there is psychology, there is prehistoric studies, archaeology, the classics. Everything has to do with anthropology, and everything gives information which broadens our view toward humanity. But the problem is that we have a lot of details. We know so many details, but the more details we know, the less we understand what for human beings are, why they are, and what the reason is for human beings. It is interesting that the more detailed the anthropological science became, the less there was a common theory for the existence of human beings. In the Middle Ages, this was the accepted definition of mankind, and nobody questioned it. That was basic knowledge about mankind. And from this mankind, from this definition, you could formulate ethics, you could formulate how to function in a society, and so on. Today, because there is a lack of a theory, and there is an overwhelming mass of information, we lose our sense for knowing what we are and what we are for. And therefore, the problem of ethics, the problem what should we do, and the problem of what can we hope, is today much more important than in a time when this enormous information wasn't there. It's very easy to understand that the more you know, the more complicated and difficult things become. And the convictions among modern anthropologists, I think among almost everybody, is that despite the fact that anthropologists have to look for the detail, they have to find details and information about humanity, we have to learn to understand our existence in a whole way, in a way of wholeness. And that means that what I mentioned before, the three questions belong together. And anthropology without ethics is very dangerous and useless for humankind. And anthropology without any expectation for the future, you can call it religion, you can call it futurology or whatever. I don't want to bring a proof of the need of religion into this question. However you call it, but you need to have a perspective toward future. That is the task of anthropology as well. We know much more how we function, but we know less and less what for we function. And that is exactly the question we have to ask today if we want to understand our existence in this world. One big problem of modern sciences is that they try, The whole sciences work basically on the same principle. The same principle is the basis for this definition: to separate, to find the common ground, and then to separate the specifics. But that had very dangerous results in all sciences, from physics to biology to anthropology, that we went more and more into the detail. We separated and divided and so on, but we didn't understand the whole. We understand the whole less and less. And that is one problem in modern biology, for example, that we may understand the details of genealogy and so on, but we don't understand the whole garden of the world, how it functions together. And only in the very new time, since maybe 10, 20 years, a special science is established, the ecology science, which try to understand the world more from a wholeness perspective than from a detail perspective, which was the way sciences functioned from the very beginning until the 20th century. And maybe we are in a very dramatic change of the way sciences work in this century. Some specific problems of anthropology. We discussed that already. How can we understand humankind in relation to nature and in its specificities in comparison with nature? It is obvious, I think, that human beings are very specific and different creatures if you compare us with other creatures. So the beginning of modern anthropology was the question of what makes us different. And there are several attempts we discussed already. One big attempt was to define humanity as the animals with language. And in a way you can translate this animal rationale not only as animals with reason, but as animals with language too. I speak a bit about that a bit more tomorrow the day after tomorrow when we deal about with Johann Gottfried Herder, who was the beginning of modern anthropology in the 18th century. Another thing is culture. Human beings create their own world. If you look at the world as it is today, you see that there is a process of creation. And this has to do with one big problem of humankind, which seems to be a disadvantage, but is maybe the big advantage of humanity. Human beings, compared with animals, have a lot of disadvantages. There are a lot of animals who are faster than human beings. There are a lot of animals who can see much better, who can smell much better, and so on. You can compare. Animals function in their environment, in their specific environment, much better than human beings. Human beings are really helpless creatures. If you would put a newborn baby in the wilderness, it couldn't survive. Human beings are helpless creatures. But this lack, this big disadvantage in comparison with all other animals, led to the possibility of learning, to the possibility of culture, and to the possibility of society. Human beings need the help of other human beings to survive. Very famous anthropologist Adolf Portmann speaks about an extra uterine year, is that correctly pronounced, which says that compared with other animals, human beings should be one more year in the uterus to be able to survive in nature. Then they would develop so much that they could survive by their own. So all of us, we are, how do you call that, early born or premature? All of us are premature. That's interesting. But this led to the possibility of learning and to the possibility that a society was developed, that that is a separation, for example, of work, that some human beings can support by their works other human beings who support these beings by their work, and so on, that it is a whole process of a society. And that is, if you track down the development of humankind, that is the first appearance of humankind, that societies, very primitive, I don't know, I think in English the word primitive has not so bad sound as it has in German. So I'm always, in German I'm always reluctant to call them primitive societies. But in a way, when you compare it with modern societies, you see that the process of functioning was much easier, was much more direct than today. I mean, to have money, for example, is a very late development of society, an abstraction, which made things much more complicated, as you know. To live in a country of the greatest debtor in the world, you know that money is a problem. So this early societies functioned much less complicated than the modern world functions. That is not difficult to see. But still it was a society where the single person depended on other persons, and only the society as a whole could survive, not the single person as a whole. We spoke already about tools, that tools are very characteristic of humankind. Another thing is religion. From the very beginning on, that is quite interesting, and it's a very big problem for the Marxist anthropology. Of course, there are not only anthropologists divided by their special field, but by their worldviews too. So we have a Marxist anthropology, and we have a Christian anthropology. So it is a big problem for Marxist anthropology that from the very beginning on, you find religion in humankind. Religion seems to belong to humanity. The question not only who am I, but the question who am I in front or before a higher being or a transcendent reality. We come to this later when we speak about theological anthropology. One big distinctive moment in humanity is the uprightness of humanity. When men began to walk on two legs, the hands became free to work, to use for using tools and so on. Okay. And there are several other, I just realized that I run out of time. There are several other kinds of distinction between humanity and other creatures in the world. Maybe I should just quit here. I just finished one point in my concept, and the next part of the series, as I announced, will be the anthropology of Martin Luther, and that is maybe a good point to make now, because we have to, after this general information, I hope it was not too boring, about problems of anthropology, we have to ask, why is there a special interest in theology, in anthropology? And if you see how theology and sciences work together and didn't work together, you see that it's a very important question we have to learn as Christians and as theologians. Maybe anthropology is the possible field where we can find a way to come together again after the big separation in the Enlightenment, the separation between theology and natural sciences. But this tomorrow. Thank you.